Hi, everybody from the University at Buffalo School of Social Work. Welcome to the In Social Work podcast. It's great, as always, to have you along. I don't know if you've heard, but we're going to elect a new president here in the United States. I'm Peter Sabota. As we approach a historical and unprecedented fall 2024 election cycle, U.S. citizens appear to have plenty of pretty dismal feelings about politics in general. And elected officials. And this includes the quality of the people running for offices. Public opinion doesn't seem pretty. Many voters feel angry, exhausted, and in some cases, kind of hopeless. Interestingly, and so far, a number of us, probably not enough, still vote. Social workers who are drawn to macro-level practice often cite the lack of jobs available that focus on these issues and then add comments about the poor salaries. Social workers possess a lot of skills, and while many apply these in relatively traditional social work settings, these skills are very well suited to political activity and policy work, and even more so political office, the room where it happens. Standard 6 in the National Association of Social Workers Code of Ethics addresses a social worker's ethical responsibilities to the broader society. Elected office seems like an ideal way to adhere to our concerns about social welfare, public participation, and social and political action. On today's show, our guest, Erica Pence, PhD, will review her scholarship focusing on social workers and elected office, and make the case that social workers are a really good fit for a role in the political arena. She will share what she's learned from interviewing social workers who have run and served in political office, and share recommendations for aspiring social workers looking to pursue a political career. Dr. Pence also has some suggestions for social work program curriculums and professional organizations about how to better prepare their colleagues and students for successful political action in elected office. Erica Pence, MSW, PhD, is Assistant Professor of Social Work at Eastern Washington University School of Social Work. Hi, Erica. Welcome to In Social Work.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, no, it's our pleasure. Thanks for agreeing to do this and taking the time. We do appreciate it. So I know you're in the Pacific Northwest, but I'm going to ask you anyway, because I'm envious and I'm bitter and I want you to tell me the weather is awful. So I feel better about the whole thing and the fact that I'm on the East Coast. What's going on over there?
It is a little bit awfulish today.
Oh, good. Okay. Keep going.
High in 99 and we're under a heat advisory and have been. So, but we don't have the humidity that you all have over that way. So,
oh, you had to throw that in. Okay. All right. That's fair. It's the dry heat.
Yes.
Story. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, listeners who aren't familiar with the Pacific Northwest, Erica is in the desert of Washington State, near Spokane. So, all right here. Well, thank you for putting up with that. I know we just interviewed another person from the Pacific Northwest and it's starting to bug me. All right. So I usually start our conversations by briefly asking our guests. I'm always curious because the stories have been really interesting. How our guests, in your case, how you came to the social work profession, if you'd be willing to tell us that. And then how you became interested in the topic for our conversation today, which is, you know, social workers running for elected office. So if you'd be willing to take me up on that, would you do that as best you can? The abridged version, maybe?
Yeah. So I'll start with, how I got into social work.
Yeah.
You know, some folks, you know, grew up having social workers as parents or social workers in their lives. I didn't know any social workers. I don't think I knew it was a profession when I was young. Mm-hmm. I always enjoyed volunteering in high school and college, did a lot of that. I ended up graduating. My undergrad is in sociology. So I bounced around a little bit, but my first couple years were at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. And they now have both a BSW and MSW program, but at the time, it's been several years ago, they only had an MSW program. But across the university, you could take like an intro to social work course that fulfilled one of my gen eds. And so I took it and was fascinated. And probably if there would have been a BSW program at that time, I probably would have explored it more. But I stuck with sociology, fell in love with it in a big lecture, Soc 100. I still remember the professor's name, Dr. Judith Tar. She was doing some really cool, her and her husband had started an intergenerational living compound facility outside of Champaign.
Oh, wow.
I remember hanging out. The class was like until 3 o'clock on a Friday, right? Everybody's ready to get out. And the bell went off and she's still talking. And I stayed for probably another half hour because I was fascinated. So I often wonder if that is why I gravitate and that macro and policy is my jam because I was, have a sociology background. I think that's interesting thinking about what folks, I had a psych minor, so but I've always kind of been systems thinker. So
I would, if you can, I would like you to bottle and pass that jam around more.
I'm
we,
trying.
we,
I'm
we, we
trying.
have, yeah, I know you're trying. We have a lot of clinical social workers, and I was kind of one of those too. So, but yeah, let's get that jam out in mass production.
Yeah. So I ended up transferred, ended up graduating from St. Ambrose University, a small school in Davenport, Iowa. They also now have a BSW program, but did not. So I stuck with sociology. I, loved it. But in my senior seminar class, we had folks from the MSW program come in and say, a lot of folks come into social work with sociology backgrounds. So we wanted to talk with you about the program. And that was when I was really, okay, I think social work, is somewhere that I want to go. At the same time, I wanted to graduate, make, a little bit of money and come back. But I'd always, that planted kind of the like an MSW. Worked for a handful of years. I sold real estate. I worked at a nonprofit daycare. And then I spent a couple of years working for Big Brothers Big Sisters. And at that point, about a year into my 2 years, I was like, okay, I'm ready to start thinking about going back to school and getting my MSW. So did that and went in thinking clinical realm, right? My intro,
Pretty common.
my admission essay was like, I want to be a therapist, which kudos to therapists, we need them too. But shortly after starting the program, we had two policy courses in the program. And first semester, I was sitting in the first policy course and fell in love with it. I had Professor Johnny Augustine, who is still a mentor of mine and a big reason I fell in love with policy and went on to get a PhD. So that kind of set the stage there and kind of really set my trajectory and passion for policy, and did a couple years of practice and then went and got my PhD. And currently I'm doing academia. And so we'll see what else. I've still got a whole career, and there's so many other things that I want to do. So we'll see where I go from here.
I'm always shocked how serendipitous some of these journeys are, and mine was kind of like that too. But it's really interesting, and I think you already answered the question on how you got into, or maybe you didn't, about why, political office became an interest of yours.
Yeah, which that wasn't really anything, in my master's program that was talked about, right? It was, policy, but certainly policy, I think, is the big foundation and base, and we've got to have that for them thinking about social workers in elected office. So, specifically for like this the study and this topic. I started the PhD program with my kind of interest, which, you know, I'd had from, I'd come from living on a farm and seeing food systems on a, you know, personal level, and what that looks like, and the myths around the amount of food that we create or what's accessible, as well as some of my practice experience with creating some food programming and working with on-site school food pantries. So when I started my PhD program, that was, and still is, you know, aside from this topic, food access and food justice is a, you know, big interest, and I've done a lot of research in it. So second semester of my PhD program, so this would have been 2019, January of 2019, I was in a qualitative course and we had to design a study. And so I was thinking food stuff, but then I also started, you know, this topic was kind of bubbling. At that time, we've been starting the third year of the Trump administration, right? Yep. And thinking about all of these policies that are being talked about and passed that are so antithetical to social work and just basic human rights, right? Not even social work, just basic human rights. And thinking about, well, we know this stuff as social workers. And like, in order to get socially just policies past, like, we should be in public office, right? And so I thought, you know, this class project is the perfect opportunity to do that. So I went that trajectory and continued it after the class. You know, it wasn't the intention of the course to do a whole study and publish it, although I do have some classmates that did that as well. So I pursued that, and that's how this study came to be.
Yeah, well, thank you. That was, yeah, again, makes, it's interesting, certain courses, certain people we meet along the way kind of light us up and get us moving in ways that sometimes we never expected. So thanks. And all right, so let's get to the stuff here today. Right. Yeah, so, you know, while you were talking, I was thinking, yeah, it's about time social workers got in the room where it happens, so to speak. So how about this? Let's see if we can kind of set the playing field a little bit. Could you spend a little time telling us at least your take about what the playing field is for social workers who seek or hold elective office? And maybe even, I don't even know if that was a great question, but even if you could, maybe, you know, how many social workers are doing this? I know you've looked into this. So what is the playing field, and how many of us are or are not holding elected office?
Yes. So the good thing is that there are several social workers in elected office.
Several.
But when we think about, right, in terms of how many, just think about in Congress, right, our U.S. Congress, you know, we've got 100 senators and 435 representatives, right? Mm-hmm. And of that, a very small fraction are social workers. But then we also have state and local office, which is really important as well. So I jotted down, I made notes because I wanted to name folks and make sure that I've got that. But so I want to start federal level. And CRISP, the Congressional Research Institute for Social Work and Policy, their website is crispinc.org, do a nice job of keeping a website with social workers in U.S. Congress. So right now we have a handful of them. We have a couple in the Senate, Debbie Stabenow from Michigan, who's been in elected office for over 2 decades. And then Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, and she's been in that role for about 5 years. And then we have three in the U.S. House of Representatives currently. Barbara Lee from California, who's been at it since 1998, right? So she's got time in too, which is fantastic. Sylvia Garcia from Texas. And then the newest member in U.S. Congress is Hillary Scolton from Michigan, and she was elected in 2022. So that is who we have at the federal level at this point. Yeah. And then Another noteworthy, certainly, we've been at this as social workers for over 100 years. Jeanette Rankin, who was a social worker, was first social worker elected to Congress back in 1916. So we do have a history there. Another prominent name, she retired about 7 years ago, I think in 2017, but Barbara Mikulski from Maryland served for 30 years in the Senate. And prior to that had a decade in the House. So she, you know, was a public servant for over 40 years. So definitely some trailblazers coming out of social work. So that's fantastic. At the state and local level, numbers are not so, it's not so easy. We don't have a, and that's, I think I'll touch on that later. We'll probably get to, you know, what can be done. NASW, National Association of Social Workers, on their website keeps a list of social workers in elected office. However, you know, I don't know how often that's updated. I was looking at it to see what they've got for numbers now. And I just know from some folks that I know that should be on the list that aren't, and then some that are no longer in office. So I've made myself a note to email them with updates. But they currently, there's 212 listed on their roster. So, you know, again, that number, I think it's probably, you know, fairly accurate. And that is, that encompasses state office, so state legislatures, state senators, state representatives, as well as everything local, from library boards to city councils to mayors, county commissioners.
Those are all included in the numbers you just gave us?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Because I'm sorry for interrupting, because when, you know, I think a lot of the students who at least I talk to, so this is purely anecdotal, but, you know, we talk about Congress and, you know, higher level federal kind of stuff, and they're super intimidated, right? And, you know, I talk about state levels, county legislatures, and then I say, you know, if you really want to make a difference in your community, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find better opportunities than serving on the library board. I mean, that's a hot spot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even something you should be scared of doing at this point, or even the school board.
Yeah.
Which I, and those numbers probably aren't as easily included in those that you just said. So
right.
I guess if you allow me this, and feel free not to allow me this if you disagree, but if we talk about how many social workers tend to navigate toward this kind of career trajectory, that's not really a lot,
no,
given who we are.
No.
So,
yeah. You think about 212, even if that's off somewhat, think of all, right? Yeah, all of the states, all of the communities, all of the libraries that we have across the country. Yeah.
So given who we are, our mission, our values, all this kind of improving the lives of people stuff, social justice that we have stood for a long time, and these kind of tiny little numbers, I'm going to say this as eloquently as possible. What's the deal with that?
I think there's a number of reasons, but before I just thought in talking about my list, there is another name that I want to specifically list, and then I'll
go
good.
One more. Okay, let's do
here,
it.
See, here I am digressing a bit.
Yeah, that's fine.
So I think this is really cool because just last year in 2023, we had in Katie Hobbs is a social worker from Arizona.
Katie Hobbs is a social worker?
Yes, she is the first social worker elected as a governor in one of our U.S. states, and that just happened last year. So that's so that's exciting. So I wanted to mention that.
Yeah.
Yes. So then I guess in talking about Why aren't there more? It's a combination of reasons, right? And this has been highlighted in research, and certainly what the folks in my study said. You know, a big one is fear, right?
Fear.
This fear of politics, fear of knowing what you can and cannot do, and thinking about when it comes to campaigning and what you can talk about or can't talk about, right? So that was one that's been you know, talked about a lot about in the research. And certainly as I teach both undergrad and master's courses at Eastern, and that's something that the students talk about too, this kind of fear or being intimidated by policy. So that's a big one. So we've got to, right, chip away at that, bust that myth that politics are scary, right?
Yeah.
Another big one, right? Elected office itself is not talked about or taught or promoted as a social work career trajectory, right? Let alone kind of policy. And I mean, it certainly, there are policy courses and curriculums. You know, I'll maybe brag a little bit later about one of the courses that I teach that I'm proud of, and hope that there are other courses like this across the country, or that folks start to think about incorporating these types of things. So I think that's a big one, right? The rhetoric is that, like, social workers should be at the table to advocate kind of on or for policies, not that we should be the ones writing policies or in elected office. So I think that's something.
That's a bad argument. What? Why?
So I think that's a big one too, right? Just the idea, the trajectory, what all social work encompasses. There's still very much a heavy focus in social work education on clinical practice. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I'm not here to say one or the other is better, right? If we all flew into policy and nobody was in the communities providing clinical work, we'd be in big trouble. And at the same time, if those of us that, you know, love policy and other macro areas, if we all, you know, move towards clinical and forgot policy, things would be a mess too, right? So we definitely, you know, we've got to have both. But I think the clinical focus that has historically been a part of social work education, as well as, I think there's a lot, and this would be a whole other conversation, is around licensure, right? And what it means to be a professional social worker and the prestige or thinking. Certainly licensure is needed and required in a lot of clinical positions. There's a lot of areas of practice that you don't need it. I don't hold a license, and actually in looking at NASW's roster of those in offices, not a ton are licensed. You know, that whole piece has something to do with it as well. And then again, I kind of got at this with fear, but politics, right? The idea that you're going to be involved in politics.
Power. Power.
Yeah.
Overt expression of,
And I hear this a lot from my students, and it's, you know, I get it, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm a firm believer that social work inherently is political, right? And I don't think we can get away with that. But I hear a lot of students that kind of loathe politics for various reasons.
Well,
and so, you know, maybe, you know,
make your own joke there, everybody listening at home. But okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I think that kind of dislike of politics, and also, right, like, what we know about politics, there's so much more to it. You know, and at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and say things are peachy, right, in politics. We're sitting here, what, 4 days after an attempted assassination on a former president and currently running for office, you know, President Trump. you know, there's a lot going on with voter disenfranchisement, certainly at the federal level, huge polarization. And so I certainly understand the disgust and the apathy, right? I feel it too sometimes.
Yep.
And yet, right, all the more reason for social work involvement.
With the person in environment people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. So yeah, you know, I don't know if you have similar experiences, but you know, I've been working in social work education now for, you know, 25 plus years, and I've seen a pattern, and I'll just share it with you and see what you think. And again, I was a clinical social worker, so everybody who's going to get mad at me, please moderate your anger. But I think a lot of people pursue, a lot of students pursue, I would say, traditional social work tracks, and they go to work in agencies and clinical positions and things like that. And then something very interesting happens. Maybe 4, 5, 6 of years later, they realize, for example, if they're working in a school, they're just meeting another kid who lives in poor housing in a poor neighborhood without parks and without resources and without parents who fill their house with books and take them to museums. But it's just another kid in that spot who's in trouble at school with a different face, but there's a never-ending supply of these kids. And then it hits them, for example, in this example, there's a never-ending supply of this, and there's our environment in action. And what do I do to move upstream here a little bit? How do I think about macro-level interventions that will put a nick in the picture, or whatever, that's a terrible metaphor, but a dent in the never ending supply of, you know, kids who live in substandard housing or stuff like that. And I don't know, have you had that take on things as yet?
Yes. Yeah, I would agree. And I think, So post MSW, I worked for Iowa State University Extension and Outreach in one of the counties. And we had a family support program in several schools. And we're doing a number of really cool things. And, you know, so we're there providing kind of direct services to the families, to the teachers, supporting the students. And yeah, at the same time, you're seeing the same things happen. And luckily, my former boss, who I did my internship, one of my placements during my MSW with her in that program as well, as it was just a pilot program, kind of picked up and really supported my love for policy and really helped me to see, okay, yep, here we are, we're meeting, we're working with this family to help them, you know, get XYZ or do XYZ. And at the same time, this is happening with how many kids in the school. So, you know, we've got these resources to address homelessness issues because of McKinney-Vento legislation, right?
And right,
so
yeah.
That, yes, and so there's that connection. So again, you've got to have folks there in the schools or in the hospitals, wherever it is. But yes, we also at the same time have to have that systems piece, and just mesh.
And maybe that's the way it's got to be. Maybe people need to go out there and see this for themselves. But I'm always curious about how can I help people see this in a front-loaded way, right? We can do both. We're capable of doing, you know, micro and macro level interventions and practice and perspectives at the same time. So let's get to, I know you've done some scholarship around social workers who held and ran for elected office. And so I want to talk about that. You did a lot of in-depth interviews, or a number of them at least. So what were there themes? Were there consistent takeaways as you interviewed these folks about their experiences, you know, that are just top of mind for you, the commonalities?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'll say it is, you know, and this goes to kind of already what you and I have talked about. It's difficult to find those folks, right? I mean, I started, you know, going through NASW and then did some snowball sampling of, you know, this social worker in office, like, oh, they're also a social worker. Like, you should reach out to them. Like, let me help you connect them. And so that, like, previous scholarship in wanting to learn more about social workers and in public office, you know, it was a difficult. So I was interviewing social workers in Ohio specifically. I focused there. That's where I was. I was at Ohio State at the time doing my PhD. So and the social workers I interviewed represented a number of, there weren't any U.S. Congress offices held, but some state legislature. Everybody had been elected and served at some point, except one of the participants had run for school board, but unsuccessfully had not been elected. Several things I'll just touch on. A few, and then I think we'll probably even get to more as we lead into, you know, what can be done. I think we're going to
touch
on that as well. But a big thing is, you know, in a sense that elected office is just like any other social work job, right? I think sometimes, again, this fear, or it's like, oh, it's this big thing. You've got to have a law degree. You've got to be a business person. Completely not the case, right? And it's, you know, a position that are the skills that we learned in, you know, are some of our most foundational skills to social work practice that we learn in our BSW or MSW program and then go on to use in various areas of practice. Active listening, right? The elected officials are, you've got to be a good listener. You're listening to your constituents come in, right? Whether that's a planned meeting or a lot of times at the local offices, they've got folks just, you know, coming in, wanting to vent about or share their frustrations about XYZ, right? And so this active listening piece was huge. Relationship building, right? We are relationship builders in social work. And that's another huge one, right? Not only with the constituents, but with the, you know, your communities, your fellow folks that are alongside you in elected office, building relationships with the community organizations that you're going to, you know, need funding and help run your programs that your policies specify. So, that was big. Even things like motivational interviewing, some of my participants talked about using in their work as elected officials, which I thought was really interesting.
People can't see me, but I'm kind of giggling because I've actually done some training here in Buffalo with motivational interviewing to people who work in some of the state senators' offices.
Oh, awesome.
And so it's just kind of like they're telling me about some of the folks who come in, and like you said, some of them are, you know, they're mad and they're complaining, and that whole kind of dealing with resistance, or now they call it sustained talk. It was like I gave them $1 million. Those are great skills. I agree.
Yeah.
Even solution focused adaptations, I think, would be wonderful in situations like that. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So maybe even then, right, as we're teaching those skills in social work education, like, here's oftentimes where you think they're at, but hey, you might use them in elected office, right? Maybe that's another way to plug in the exposure.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious to go back to the people who you interviewed for your paper and study. You told us a little bit about, you know, some were elected in various places. Did you talk with them about how they felt their formal social work education prepared them or not for elective office?
Yeah.
Does that make any sense? I think you know what I mean.
Yep. Yeah, and a lot of it, one of the big pieces is, again, these foundational skills, right, that we oftentimes associate with, more micro or meso practice, that some of the skills that I just mentioned. They said those were, critical to that. Some of the things that tended to, not be there or be there so much is like, okay, well, none of them really learned how to like run a campaign in
Like how
it.
to like campaigning 101, right? I
Yep.
no, not in our program, not
Yeah.
that I'm aware of at least.
Yep.
Yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
As well as, I think like the budget, and kind of like administration stuff, money stuff. I think we certainly, I know in some of our, we get a little bit at that. So that was something. And I think there's, again, a balance in thinking about what we do in social work education and, what can social work organizations do. There's, we've only got so many spots for courses and the content that we have to have for CSWE and that sort of thing. So I think that's always going to be a balance in determining what we can bring in and not. But so I guess with that being said, I'm saying, like money is important. And I think there's often this kind of like joke, which I don't really like social workers aren't good at math, right? Yeah, we can be okay with math. And, budgets are important. And so we do in one of the classes, the policy MSW course that I teach, we do some stuff around budgets. And so I think just some foundational stuff is important. But they said that the folks in my study said, that tends to be not as prevalent or wasn't as, embedded or even there at all in my education. And at the same time, there's a lot, just like any other job, you learn on the job, right? You've got folks around you. You don't walk into this, you may be the only person holding that elected office, but you've got your people around you, right? And so, just like anything else, you'll learn as you go. So I think that was another important thing that, when we think about plugging and talking to students or just social workers about elected office, you don't have to have like all of the skills. Like you as a social worker have come out of a social work education program. Like you've got a solid set of skills that will then, right, like put you on the springboard to kind of acquiring everything else. So I think that really stood out to me as well, that we just because we are social workers and the education and the values and the ethics that we practice by, that's kind of this solid foundation. It's enough to get us in the door, and more than that, right? I think I don't want to downplay that at all. And then we build on those skills and maybe hone in on the little pieces that we only got a little bit in internships or,
Yeah, I would
education.
when we start talking about organizational support and peer support and educational program, I want to ask you about some of that concrete stuff as well. But the people who you interviewed, did they and I don't know if you can even comment on this. I'm not sure you covered this specifically, but did they feel that their social work either train education and experience helped them in their positions?
Very much so. And there was not any discussion of how being a social work had hindered them, I guess, if that makes
Gotcha. It didn't hurt. Well, yeah, I'm gonna ask you about that later too. So I'm gonna save that. But the would they do it again? The people you interviewed, would they run again?
I guess that wasn't necessarily a specific question I asked.
Ah, okay.
Several of them were currently
Oh,
in.
they were still at it. Okay, yeah.
Yep. Some had, I think, retired. The one that had not held elected office at all, she wasn't currently looking to run again, but certainly, you know, talked about it as being something that, you know, might be there for her in the future. So
So I think I've kind of done this already, but I want to do this overtly. It's put Erica on the spot time here. So, and again, you've hinted at this, but I want to see if I can kind of pin this down a little bit based on your knowledge, your experience, and your scholarship. Do you believe that social work, now I'm asking you to speak, I know this is unfair, but I'm doing it anyway. Do you think social work education and current professional organizations do a good job, essentially, of preparing students and social workers for not only garnering interest, but winning and being effective? So if I put you in charge of judgment, do you even want to nibble on that one, Eric? I don't know.
Yeah. So I think there are, you know, some great things being done, right? But certainly from my anecdotally, it sounds like from yours, from the research I've done, from research that, you know, others have done, we need to do more, right? There's room for, so I think that there are some.
Well played, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So I think that there are, and you know, and the folks in my study highlighted, talked about, you know, some things that can be done, both, you know, in terms of social work organizations, thinking about NASW or CSWE, social work programs, and then even themselves as, social workers in elected office, like how can we support this, right? So
Well, it's hard. It's kind of like, it's hard to support people when we're, a lot of us aren't there yet, right? Yeah. I think you've got to have a critical mass of people who speak your language and who get you in or, because you can feel like an other. You know, you're not an insider, you're not a political animal, you're not connected in those ways. And so, you know, you don't even bother, you don't even think about it, let alone pursue it and try and be effective. So you know you put you on the spot question was going, I'm sure you did. Is so and we've hinted at this, what can we do better? What can we do more of? How can we even, it seems as simple as, you know, speaking about it to promote interest. I mean, just talking about it, demystify it a bit. So what can we do better?
I like how you say demystify, right? Yeah. Demystify, kind of like debunk the myths that exist out there. And so this study that I did, right, this is now 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, mine was one of few that have really connected with and explicitly spoken with elected social workers, right? I think now, you know, and even in these last 5 years, I think this kind of political social work, social workers getting more involved in just policy, but also in elected office, I think because of things that have happened, right, at the federal level, but all levels in the last several years, and the election that we're facing come November. And, you know, so I think that's helping. And again, yeah, I think you're right. It's just another area as we talk more about it, and as people learn more, then we'll start to be able to take action. So in terms of what can we do? I want to highlight when you talked about, you know, how are we preparing specifically people to run and win?
Yeah.
Not, I mean, to my knowledge, again, right, there's so many social work programs across the country that was, you know, it's you know, I always think about all of the other studies that could be done, like stemming from this in terms of like content and what folks are teaching. You know, we can look at a course, you know, a policy or a course syllabus, but you or I know, right? There's also things that we're talking about in class that don't show up there. So that's a whole nother, I'm digressing a bit, but
it's okay.
The University of UConn, the Nancy A. Humphreys political social work, huge there. They do a campaign school for social workers.
Go
I
on.
I have not participated in my, you know, myself. And I guess I should state this. I have never run for political office, elected office at this point. Maybe sometime in the future. I think for myself, I'm kind of, you know, in my career, I haven't been, I think it's important to be part of the community or the place that you're representing, right? You know, you've got to know that. And so maybe that will come someday for me. So I think that's something important to consider, but, the campaign school, I would love to do that, at some point. So they, you know, it's kind of this intense how you, run as an elected official. So that's, you know, that's something that's awesome. Again, just highlighting programs like that. I try and in my course content, when I talk about political social work and elected office, you know, here are some things that are happening. Check it out. University of Michigan offers a political social work certificate.
Ah, okay. I didn't know that. All right.
Yeah. Yep. University of Houston, Suzanne Pritzker, who is faculty there. I actually met her several years ago at CSWE when I was presenting on this study because she's done a lot of work in political social work, but she heads their, I think it's called their Austin Legislative Internship Program. So it's only for, you know, social work students at University of Houston, but they essentially are doing their internships in the Texas legislature. So that's pretty awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I know that we have here at UB, we have a couple students placed at kind of political offices. I'm not exactly sure the level, but I really do. I only know about Connecticut's, I think Connecticut's thing, that's not the way to call it, is I think it has institute status. So I think it's, you know, it's kind of like there's resources dedicated to it. It's not like baked into the curriculum, but my understanding is that it's very practical.
Yeah.
Like we were talking earlier about how to campaign, you know, hand over hand, 101, how to ask people for money. That is a model that I think could be really copied and proliferated, I think, in a lot of different places.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, so yeah, finding ways to kind of infuse that into curriculum, right? Like consistent curriculum, finding ways to, you know, in terms of making that more accessible to, you know, and I know that they do, certainly they're in Connecticut, they hold it, but I know that, occasionally, I think they hold that campaign school in different places across the country, or at least in the past, you know, so I think that's something, I'm going to, here, I'm going to brag a little bit about one of the classes I teach that we have.
Brag away.
It's our pro seminars in social welfare policy and programs, I think is the official name. I probably will mess that up. I just know it by the course number and that it's my favorite class to teach. But it's, we have two policy courses in our MSW sequence, and this is the second. They take it, you know, as they're at the end of their program. And essentially, they group up and create and then carry out an advocacy campaign on a social issue that they are passionate about. And so, you know, that looks a little different than running for elected office, but I think there's a lot of overlap. So that's really helpful. And in that process, not all of them, because they have options to kind of pull and choose from the different types of advocacy, but a lot of them will do kind of that, we call it the capital leg, right? Engaging with folks. I had a group of students last year that one of our local representatives here, they'd reached out to him and he was like, I want to work with you on, you know, like drafting policy. I don't know if anything has come of that, but that's pretty cool, right? A group of students that get asked, like, because of their expertise and what they have brought to an elected official, for them to say, hey, like, I need you. I want you to help me draft this legislation.
Yeah. And all of the things, well, both of the things that you're talking about right now seem to me like just natural and really useful bridges to an inevitable goal of being that person in the room.
Yeah. So, and I think it's also, again, I think I said it earlier that, you know, policy, which I know there's a lot of pieces to that, but policy broadly, right, I think is a huge foundation in creating that excitement or interest then and then pursuing elected office. And so I it's my jam. I tell my students that. And I had a couple of really nice, I just taught that spring quarter. We're on quarter. So they've got to do this advocacy project in 10 weeks, which is crazy, but they do fantastic work and you know, achieve what they're able to achieve. One of the students in their reflection paper, they write a reflection paper about the project. And mm-hmm. it just noted that, you know, now I'm thinking about a career in public policy and I hadn't been before. And like your teaching of it is, it's contagious, right? And so for me, that was like the hugest compliment, right? Mm-hmm. Like because I am genuinely excited about it. And so I think in how we as educators, right, if you're in the classroom, we know that, you know, to me, the unfortunate reality, right? Because again, I'm biased that policy is so fantastic. that in general, social work students don't care for or gravitate toward policy, right? And so how mm-hmm. can we know that and work with that, right? Yeah. I think that's a huge piece in how we just even teach policy. And then again, when we're teaching policy, these are all of the areas, right? There's certainly organizational and programmatic policy, but also, hey, you can, you can be writing and passing and voting on laws as an elected official.
Yeah, I want to throw you some kind of excitement or hopeful vibes here. I have no doubt, I haven't studied this per se, but I have a very strong anecdotal observation that some of my colleagues here would agree that at our school, I would say in the last 10 years, we are getting more and more people, students, who are walking in wanting to chase macro level social work. Not necessarily political office yet, but there's a shift. Yes. And I find that really encouraging, which is why I want to capitalize on this and get people as fired up as you are. Let's see.
I think I want to add, Peter, in the classroom, because I know where, you know, a majority or a lot of the students are sitting. And so, you know, I don't want to you have to do policy or you have to, I always tell my students, you don't have to love it, right? My hope by the end of the quarter is that you learn something and that even if you never go into a, you know, elected office or let alone kind of where you're really doing policy, knee deep policy work, that you see the connection. So I always, you know, even paint the picture of like, even if you're a therapist sitting one-on-one with a client in this office that you've got, insurance policy, right? All of this and as a way to kind of help them connect the dots. And I think we have to keep capitalizing and on that and keep at that.
Great metaphor, connect the dots. How to turn these passions and kind of interests into action. And in the most practical way. I mean, when I think about power, I think about influence. Power doesn't have to be a bad thing, right? It can be, but it doesn't have to be.
And I think too, going off of that, you know, when we talk about politicians, right, people get a kind of icky taste in their mouth because of, I think, you know, the landscape. And so, you know, we as social workers certainly can be politicians without that dirty taste in our mouth, right? And I say this because the folks in my study, all but one, referred to themselves at any point in our conversation as a politician. They talked about being a public servant. And that first and foremost, they identify themselves as a social worker. And so—
I'm sorry, say that last part again.
That first and foremost, they identify themselves as a social worker, right? When they were campaigning, when they're in
They did do that.
Now, I am a social worker. Mm-hmm. And I also happen to hold elected office, where I'm a social worker, you know, and a state senator, but it was this social work identity. And they think, you know, they also said that I think that's critically important, important for those of us in office to articulate as another way to, for people listening, oh, there's a social worker and they're in elected office, right? Again, creating that knowledge of we are in these spaces. And I think that's, you know, even more critically important for people of color, right? In getting into elected office, you know, folks in the communities seeking services want practitioners that look like them, that have, you know, walked their walk. And I think in elected office, it is no different. So certainly social workers needed everywhere in all spaces, but you know, really important is even, you know, social workers of color in elected office.
You know, that was one of the things, I'm glad that you went there, because that was one of the things I was going to ask you about. And let me just tell you how I was probably going to phrase it is, do you think, and you said that you haven't run campaigns, but you've thought about this a lot more than most of us. Do you think that social workers should emphasize their social work status, their skill set, and their identification as a social worker up front in campaigns? It sounds like you were saying yes, but I wonder about that because, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I actually hope I'm wrong, but I think there are still a lot of folks out there who think social workers hand out welfare checks and take people's kids away. And I wonder, I think you always have to know your audience as a campaigner.
Yes. Yeah.
But I wonder if that's always the best way forward. I don't expect you to have an answer, but would you have thoughts on this? We'll chat about it for a second.
I think a really important question. And again, thinking about the study specifically, you know, I didn't ask around that, like, oh, okay, well, do you think this is the best way to go about things? More so of like, do you talk about your social work status? And they all felt very strongly and did. So I guess there wasn't any, I didn't get any data on, you know, the counter argument of that, or if there is one. You know, my first, I get where, you know, you know, how you're thinking about it. And certainly when we talk about campaigns and advocacy, that's right. That's part of knowing your audience and kind of tailoring your message. But I, you know, I guess I think, yes, upfront, I think the more, again, for the notoriety of social work, yes, I agree that, you know, there are some folks still that there is a stigma, or a lot of folks, I think, still don't know what social workers actually do.
Yeah, right? I agree. And then they fill in the blanks with things that we wish they'd rather not.
Yes. Yeah. Or I've even had conversations when, you know, when I'm meeting a new resident in my building, like, what do you do? Oh, social workers. Oh, you know, great. You know, they're a physician and they work with social workers. And so they kind of get it. Yeah, or I've had some folks say, what actually do social workers do, right? Like, I know you're out there doing stuff. And so I think, I take that as, well, let me tell you all of the things, right? And so I think the opportunities to do that, including, you know, as folks are campaigning, to kind of like demystify or maybe debunk, right? Debunk that that this is all that social workers do, right? Or that we're
Sure.
bleeding heart liberals, right? That's another thing that I get,
Right.
right? Another label.
That's what I was alluding to in some ways too. Yeah.
And so
There's
I,
this, it's almost a stigma. It really is for some. That's why I think you kind of gotta, I think if I was gonna run, I would really have to think about where I'm running, what my senses of how people perceive this. And obviously you got to talk to people. That's where all those great skills that you were talking about come into play. But you got to know your audience. That's part of messaging, if you will,
Yes.
as a political animal.
Certainly. I would agree. And so I think maybe that's also earlier you'd mentioned, well, we might get to thinking about the realities that if social workers are going to run for elected office, right? Like what
Yeah,
I think that's this is good to think about that, right? Like in terms of how are you going to message and talk about being a social worker or not or how that looks. So I think that's certainly
how if I'm sorry, how cool are you going to be with asking people for money? I mean, that's a skill. I find that really tough, and I admire people who can do it and do it well. And I think you're going to have to be to do that, to be successful.
definitely. And another aspect of money, and this is something folks in my study got at, but in thinking about securing office, right? Not a shocker that social workers are, underpaid. So side plug, right? Like argue and we're worth it, right? Like argue for your advocate for your place and your as your role and your pay. But as things sit, so when we're thinking about running for elected office versus perhaps people that have been attorneys or are in the business world and have all of these connections with money, that is part of the game, right? Money is a big player in the game. And so that is something that in terms of yes, so the skill of asking for money, organizations rallying around, helping to raise funds and awareness to support social
And
workers
asking
in
people
office.
to help you rather than helping them, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we're kind of bumping up our against our time limit here. So I wanted to I want to give you the last word if you have one. But before you give the last word, I just want to tell you because I'm very excited about what you're saying, and I want to share this because it gives me a lot of encouragement as well. I would say probably in the last 7 or 8 years, I've had three former students run for local office here in Western New York. None of them have won. They ran in challenging districts, number one. They probably weren't supposed to win simply because they ran on a Democratic line. And this is what I find most encouraging. One of them has now run twice. And I just find that incredibly encouraging and hopeful. And so my sample is three. I know yours is much larger, but I did want to share that with you and with our audience. It's happening. Go ahead, please.
And I
Sorry.
think that's important to note too, again, something that came up with the folks that I talked to. One was she'd held was in some other, local office, but then was pursuing, I can't remember now without going back and looking at the raw data. But she was, it was multiple times and she was hoping to be, elected after her, I think her third run and talked about, because of whether that's money or, your stance as a social worker and being known in the community that sometimes, and oftentimes, and just in office in general, it may take more than one go around, and that's okay, and to keep at it.
That's the nature of the game. I think if you look at, people who have risen to some of the highest level have lost many times in their At any rate, so now, all right. So thank you for indulging me on my hope tour there. Okay, we are at the end here. Is there something that you want to just, is this your last opportunity to spread the jam, Erica?
Okay. Yeah, well, and if I guess, you know, if folks listening are, you know, writing off elected office at this point, keep it right, keep this knowledge, share this knowledge. Another important thing I think we can do if you're not thinking about running yourself is, you know, identifying folks or encouraging folks that fellow social workers that you think, you know, have that skill set or have thought about it, right? Or that maybe, yeah, have started thinking about it, but, you know, haven't made that decision yet or kind of dove into that realm, support them. And then I guess lastly, I'll say lots of elections happening, right, in the next big one in November, right, but several local ones. I just got my ballot book here in Washington for our August election. But there are, and again, I just have names of a couple, but supporting social workers, right, if they are the right fit for the office. You know, I also want to say, if a social worker is running for office, right, you should be voting on voting them in office more than just them being a social worker. Because if they're, you know, maybe if they're not running on social work values and ethics, they're not the person for, so think about that. But I know in Gareth Fenley, she is a Democratic nominee in Georgia for the state Senate. That's going to be a pretty, you know, important race. Melody Stewart, who is on the state Supreme Court in Ohio, is being ran against by a Republican justice. Rather than them re-seeking their seat, they've decided to run against her. So I think, you know, just seeking out, you know, looking into those, if you're in those places in Georgia or Ohio, what you're going to be voting on, and just kind of in general, you know, get out there, support folks, social workers in office, if there are folks in your area running, and, you know, at the least, vote, right? Make your vote heard.
Vote and contribute. I mean, if you don't have, I mean, it's something that I've done. I've, you know, New York, I live in New York. It's kind of a predictable place. At least it has been historically. So I've been sending money in different places. And, you know, you don't have to send a lot. I mean, it's Erica, thank you so much for agreeing to do this and taking the time. It was an absolute pleasure to talk with you.
Yes, always the same to you. Thank you for the invitation. And anytime I get to voice my policy jam and love for policy and all things political is a fantastic time. So thank you so much.
Thanks again to Erica Pence for joining us today. The members who have been elected and serve on the In Social Work podcast team are our web and tech guru, Steve Sturman, our GA production assistant, Ryan Trope. Say hi, Ryan.
Hello.
And I'm Peter Simone. We love putting together the podcast and love when you get back to us with comments on our webpage, social media, or even email. Yeah, we read them. See you next time, everybody.